To see the guest schedule, go to spingola.com and click on the radio schedule button at the top of the page. Guest information is also in the RBN archives, accessible for only $1.33 per month. Additionally, one of our listeners has created a Spingola Speaks YouTube channel, which I have linked on my homepage and the radio schedule page. My guests today are Carolyn Yeager, the author of Auschwitz, The Underground Tour, and the host of her own radio program, The Heretics Hour, and Jim Condon Jr., the producer of what he initially called The Final Solution to Adolf Hitler, and renamed it The Nazi Zionist Connection, The Final Solution to Adolf Hitler. And he produced that in 2003. It was on Google, but the company removed all of their videos on April 29th. Carolyn's website is CarolynYeager.com. Jim's website is HitlerDVD.com. Now, Paul von Hindenburg appointed Adolf Hitler as the Chancellor of Germany on January 30th, 1933. Hitler became the leader on August 2nd, 1934, until his death on April 30th, 1945. Carolyn and Jim have each expressed the results of their research. Carolyn writes articles, and Jim produced a video, and both have been on radio programs expressing their views. Today, they will defend their conclusions about Adolf Hitler. Carolyn and Jim are going to discuss Hitler from two different points of view. Jim, are you with me?
Yes, how are you doing?
Good, good. Thank you for joining me. And
sure.
Carolyn?
Yes, hello, good morning.
Good morning. Okay, I assume that both of you each stand behind your previous comments regarding Adolf Hitler.
Yes, of course.
Right. Well, I mean, we can explore that, I guess, in this 2 hours, yeah.
Okay, so the game plan is this. We will take questions via email at deanna@spingola.com. In other words, we're not going to do any call-ins. If you have a question or comment for Jim, write Jim in the subject line. If you have a question or comment for Carolyn, write Carolyn in the subject line. I would like to give each of you a kind of an opening statement. You know, your general views on Adolf Hitler and your viewpoints. So just take a minute. And let's do that after the first break, which is coming up in a little under a minute. You have some commonality. Both of you agree that the Holocaust, the official version of the Holocaust, did not happen according to that official story, correct?
Yes. Right. I put it that the Hollywood version of the Holocaust is false.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. Okay, and so when we come back from the break, then Carolyn, I will ask you to give a minute description of your stance on Adolf Hitler. And when Carolyn's done, then Jim, I'll ask you for an opening remark also.
Okay.
Okay, we are going to a break. We will be back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back, friends. My guests today are Carolyn Yeager and Jim Condit, and we will be taking questions and comments via email at deanna@spingola.com. Okay, opening comments. Carolyn, are you ready?
Yes. Deanna, might I clarify something first?
Sure.
Now, it's my understanding that we are going to be discussing two topics, sort of in the first and second hours. Was Adolf Hitler part Jewish, and the other was Adolf Hitler a Zionist?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, so we don't go off,
sure,
you know, all over the place.
Sure, I've
okay.
got...
Uh, no, 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 Now, could I let me clarify what the understanding is that we can discuss both in both hours, or is that right? Or we,
yes.
We, because it's hard to, for me anyway, to limit limit conversation just to one or the other and get as much information as across as possible. But
okay.
But I'm
that's
you
fine
know,
with me.
Yeah, that was my understanding too. That would be. The and I don't just for clarification. I'm not saying that.
Well, it's my turn to make my statement. Then you can make yours.
Yeah, okay, you go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. All right. Adolf Hitler. Now I've prepared this. Now, Deanna, it's more than 1 minute, so I hope that's all right.
Okay.
It's more like two or so.
Oh yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, that's fine. Let's be flexible. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Adolf Hitler had no Jewish ancestors. That has been demonstrated. All allusions to Jews and Hitler's ancestry came from planted stories, rumors, and hearsay. No proof for these has ever been offered. I have never seen even one scant piece of proof. Neither was Adolf Hitler a Zionist, nor was he friendly with Jews, even if a few Jews or part Jews can be found among his circle. But he also did not rabidly hate Jews, certainly not as individuals. He cared about Germans, and that was his crime. Not only according to the Jews, but also to the British, French, Poles, and Dutch, among others. To the Jews, his crime was this: to protect fellow Germans, he set about to restrict the presence of Jews in influential positions in government, media, education, law, and merchandising. He encouraged Jews to leave Germany and set up programs like the transfer agreement to aid the emigration of Jews to Palestine. Jews were already settling in Palestine, thanks to the British. This desire to remove Jews from one's country was not a new phenomenon. In 1290, the Jews as a group were expelled from Britain by order of King Edward I. Until the reign of Oliver Cromwell in the 17th century, there were only secret or crypto-Jews living there. Cromwell allowed a few to return because he wanted their financial assistance. In 1492, Queen Isabella of Spain issued the Alhambra Decree to expel all Jews from Spain who did not convert to Catholicism. Between 130,000 to 800,000 left Spain, going mainly to North Africa, the Netherlands, and South America. Isabella was a reform-minded monarch who, with her husband Ferdinand, unified Spain. They reorganized the governmental system, brought the crime rate to the lowest level it had been in years, and pulled the kingdom out of enormous debt, exactly as Hitler did in Germany. But only 60,000 Jews went to Palestine from Germany, while there were already 300,000 Jewish settlers living there under British rule. Another 180,000 German Jews, three times as many as went to Palestine, voluntarily left Germany for other places, many to the United States, and this is before 1941. So much for the silly statements that Adolf Hitler was the founder of Israel. After 1941, the National Socialist plan was to deport the Jews into the Soviet Union, but by 1942 they realized they needed laborers as more and more German men were called to duty as soldiers. Now, to return to this why anti-Hitlerism and Hitler was a Zionist lie continues to be pushed so hard, the answer is to make sure such an expulsion never happens to the Jews again. As people who consider themselves the superior race among men, it infuriates Jews to be treated in such a way, and they seek revenge and restitution. By turning Hitler into the world's worst tyrant and a mass murderer to boot, by claiming he is part Jewish and therefore not someone who can be followed by those who dislike Jews, they hope to smear and contaminate Hitler's legacy. Since Hitler was successful against them, the Jews hate him and use every tactic to grind him into the dirt. And there are many, many non-Jewish useful idiots helping the Jews with this particular project. Just to name them all would be a very long list. That's my opening statement.
Okay. Jim.
Okay. I don't want to put words in Carolyn's mouth, and she can certainly speak for herself, but most of the people who refuse to look at the type of information I'm going to bring out in the next 2 hours tend to be irreligious. They need a hero, and Hitler is their hero. And when you pull out this information that shows that he was not what he was presented in either of the ways he's presented in history, then there's great resistance or absurd explanations to try to save his image. Getting too wrapped up in a pro-Hitler stance is like getting, you know, like saying, well, Hitler was better than Stalin or Hitler was better than Roosevelt. It's kind of like the people who can't see that there's international bankers like the Rothschilds behind Obama and Bush. I mean, to get too wrapped up in the Bush-Obama controversy is to not understand that they're both pathetic puppets of the international bankers today. Now, I wouldn't say that Hitler or Churchill or Roosevelt or Stalin were pathetic puppets. All of them were of much more substance than people like W. Bush and Obama today. But, for instance, I'll just throw out several things, and then we can move into the next discussion because I don't want to take too long in this opening statement. Hitler's, if I was going to tell somebody what was Hitler about, and this is leaving aside his frame of mind, Hitler was given about the equivalent of $100 million in 1929 by the Rothschilds and Warburgs for the Nazi effort, and he then went to the head of the class for those contending for the Nazi party. Basically, he had unlimited money. His job was to scream anti-Semitism, whatever his frame of mind was, and to begin the cataloging with the help of IBM and the rounding up of Jews in Germany and Germanic territories that he could get access to as a prelude to getting as many Jews as possible to Israel during and after World War II. Now, whatever Hitler's frame of mind was is another thing, but what actually happened when he came to power with IBM helping, cataloging all the Jews with almost no demand for that from the German people, that is what I would say is the short story of why Hitler was given that money to be funded to power. One of the things that is absolutely unexplainable in it regarding Adolf Hitler, unless you add in the information that we've uncovered and have brought to the fore and others have as well, is his decision to let the British go at Dunkirk early in the war, which would have ended the war. It would have ended Britain's navy. The absurd, and I mean absurd, explanation of this is that Hitler admired the British Empire so much that he wanted to, make a peace overture. Well, that would mean that he forgot that he'd been given speeches for the last 8 years or so that the Rothschilds ran England. He had to forget that the English people needed to be liberated from the Zionist bankers behind Britain, and instead of capturing the English Navy and then going in and liberating Britain, he lets them go, which clearly the script was not being followed. The war was not to be over at that point. And to try to still make some agreement with the Zionist bankers and have some place in the future of the world, Hitler let the English go. That's one thing absolutely unexplainable. I'd be very interested in Carolyn's explanation of that. And the other thing is Hitler worked for the communists in 1919. I mean, those are the two positions put out about Hitler. Is one, he's a walking demon. He was trying to kill every Jew in the world, which is absolutely absurd. That's another absolute absurdity, which we can get into. And then the other one is that he's kind of like the greatest saint and leader of the 20th century. That also is absolutely absurd. The truth is he was a man seeking. I believe he. While we can, there is not absolute proof, as Carolyn said, that he was part Jewish. I believe the preponderance of the evidence points that he was part Jewish. He was seeking his place in the world, and in 1919, it looked like the communists were going to take over the world. He was the go-between the communist Jewish communist rulers of Munich during that 6 month period in 1919, and between the soldiers and the barracks. After that, the communists were overthrown by the Free Corps group. Then he came out of there and became a Nazi. I've probably gone over my 2 minutes, Deanna, so let me stop there and we can pick up these things as we go.
Okay. We are going to break in another minute, but the first question is, was Hitler part Jewish? And each of you can, you've pretty much covered that, But I think that I would like to have some research, some sources for your positions.
Yes.
Okay, so we will go to a break, and that's the first question when we come back. And we will have Carolyn go first when we get back. And let me give you the second question that you can be kind of concentrating on, is who financed Hitler? And of course, I want sources. You know, research without sources is just like hearsay. Okay, so we are going to a break. We'll be back in 3 minutes. All righty, we are back with my guests today, Carolyn Yeager and Jim Condon Jr. And Carolyn, the first question was Hitler part Jewish?
Well, I addressed that in my opening remarks, saying definitely not, and that there is no evidence whatsoever to show that. In fact, all of the evidence proves that Hitler was not, his ancestry has been, his genealogy has been done, and it's published all over the place. Not all over the place, but wherever they do things like that. And it can be seen, and it's really not under question. So this this idea that there is a Jew in his as a grandfather, which is what it's all about, is something that's just been said. It's just been claimed. It's just something that's put out there over and over and over again by these people that I call either useful idiots or else they're agents, and with no backing. Now, I would like to, you know, Jim took a little bit longer than I did, so I want to make sure I get my share of time in. And
sure.
I would like to ask a few questions about what he said.
Sure.
When he now, Jim, here's one thing. You said in your statement 100,000, or was it 100 million? What was that number?
The
100,000. Maybe it was. I've got 100,000 written down. $100,000 in 1929 was given to Hitler by the Rothschilds and the Warburgs, and he had after that he had unlimited money from 1929 on. Now I would like to know where you get that information. I don't. I've seen things like that written, but I don't think that they have any authenticity, and I don't agree with it. I would like to know where you get that. Then you said something about I'll stop with that one because I don't really want to go into Dunkirk, although we can do that later. I mean, I think going to Dunkirk to reach for why Hitler is Jewish or sympathetic to Zionism is a pretty far reach. You know, that's a big reach. You can always say that. But it doesn't really carry any weight as far as if you're really trying to find evidence, real evidence for something.
Okay, now, Carolyn and Deanna, why don't you tell me when you want me to speak, because I don't want to be interrupting Carolyn. And secondly, I don't mind if I say something if Carolyn comes back and answers it, because she can't, you know, obviously she has to have a chance to respond sometimes to things I say. If she
sure.
goes first, you know, and now you tell me when you want me to respond, because I don't want to cut in on her time, but I think both of us could probably talk the straight 2 hours, but we don't want to do that because
yeah,
we're
sure.
trying to have a back and forth.
Yeah,
but you
sure.
tell me when you're done, Carolyn or Aunt or Deanna.
Well,
you tell
Deanna,
me when you're
done. That's my question. I would like him to answer that question right now while it's still in the
sure.
mind.
Yeah,
sure.
And I would also like to cover the communist connection that you. Absolutely.
Sure, sure,
yes.
Sure. Okay, first of all, the figure I threw out was the equivalent of $100 million. I think it was more in the range of, at that time, $20 million at that time. But the first source for that is, and these, you know, I'm interested in the things that are slipping through the cracks of history. The official version is clear. There's two official versions. One of which is Hitler is a walking demon. Everything he did.
We've heard that. Let's get.
All right. Okay.
That.
Well, and the second one is that Hitler's like secretly the greatest saint and the greatest leader of the 20th century. Now, I did not use Dunkirk to prove that Hitler was part Jewish. What I'm using Dunkirk to prove is he was in agreements with the most powerful circles in the world, and he did things that are unexplainable if you don't understand those agreements, like the funding.
Now, but what agreement? Where do you find that?
Well, the
source?
Agreement would be the funding that he received. Now, the first source for that is
If we're going to do a debate, I think that we should have to stick with the question that's asked and not go off.
All right. Well, let me
going to be wasted.
Let me get into the three sources, but you can't skip over Dunkirk. That's like I win.
Well,
we're
first talking about the 100 million, okay?
Right, and that explains the important factor that he was in agreements with the international bankers. Okay, but where are the sources? The book is called "The Prisoner of Ottawa." That's Ottawa, Canada, OTTAWA, by Douglas Reed. And that was an interview. That was where Douglas Reed, one of the most respected historians of the 20th century, at one time a reporter for the London Times, he went to Ottawa to interview, after World War II, Otto Strasser, who is one of the key...
Okay, Otto Strasser, I'll stay right here, is not a valid source for this kind of information.
Well,
because at that time he was very much on the outs with the National Socialists, and this is all this kind of
Let me give the sources here quickly, right, or some of them. And he said to Douglas Reed, he was a contender with Hitler in the 20s for leader of the Nazi Party, and his brother Gregor was one of Hitler's helpers, and he was murdered by Hitler in the Night of the Long Knives, where a lot of Hitler's key associates up to that time were murdered by Hitler. But Otto, so he has an axe to grind. But
okay.
Otto
hold that thought. We've got a 3-minute break coming up, and we'll come right back. But we need to be brief with our answers and right to the point. Okay? We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back, friends. My guests today are Carolyn Yeager and Jim Condent Jr. And in your opening remarks, both of you covered quite a lot of territory. And Carolyn did ask you exactly where did he get the money in 1929. And I'd like to give you a minute to answer that question without deviating back to what you've already said.
Okay, yeah, and if I'm going too long, just break in on me, Deanna, because we got to keep our answers short. So the first one is The Prisoner of Ottawa, which is the testimony of Otto Strasser, who I don't agree with on everything, but he said, we looked up in 1929, and Hitler had unlimited money. At that point, Hitler put out a contract on Strasser. He had to flee the country, and he was never allowed back in Germany, even after World War II, which shows he was not playing ball with the big boys. So he is a credible source for that comment that they looked up one day and Hitler had, which James Poole in Who Financed Hitler also says, after 1929, the Hitler had unlimited money. The book by Dr. Anthony Sutton, Who Financed Hitler, exhaustively documents the help that Hitler got from the West. He doesn't necessarily.
Okay, I think your minute's up.
Well,
here I go again. But, you know, we have to follow the rules. Otherwise, this whole thing doesn't.
Well, I'm giving you
anything.
The sources. You want the sources?
We already have them. I have them all written down.
Okay,
I want to comment
on
the sources. No, well, you don't get any more time, you see. Because if I can comment on this in 1 minute myself.
Okay,
comment.
All right. The book by Poole, James and Suzanne Poole, does not conclude that Hitler received money by the Rothschilds, Warburgs, Jewish financiers whatsoever. It concludes that the money, the title of the book is Who Financed Hitler? And they say that Hitler was mainly financed by small contributions from the German people and also by German industrialists who were German. They were not Jewish. And this idea then that that he said something else would simply be taking something from that book, which in which they're discussing different items that have been talked about and different possibilities and things, which and then saying that this is what they say, but this is not what they conclude. This is just discussions going on throughout the book. And this is something that Jim does a lot in his sources. He cherry picks a certain paragraph out of the entire book and then says, well, this is what this author says, you know, and it's often quite the opposite.
Okay.
Well, now do I get to answer that or do you want to go on to something else?
Go ahead. Take a minute and answer that.
Yeah, I mean, okay, first of all, I didn't say that the Poole book mentioned the Rothschilds or the Warburgs by name. I said that that Poole said that after 1929, Hitler had unlimited money. What he calls the German industrialists, I will say, will include the help from these Jewish bankers through some of those industrialists. But the other source that I didn't get a chance to mention is called, it was put out in Holland in 1935 or somewhere around there, and was called Hitler's Secret Backers. It also was others.
By Warburg.
It was by the name, put out under the name Sidney Warburg.
Yes.
It was a massive campaign to suppress every copy of that book at that time, which is not really explainable if it was an absurd book. But the proof.
Okay,
that,
well, I think, okay. You know, I'm going to. Yeah, minute.
You're going to come. Okay, I got to get in what Van Papen said about that book, which was one of Hitler's secret.
You can go ahead. You need to stick to the point better then.
No, well, the listeners can decide whether I'm sticking to the point or not, but I'm sticking to the point. I'm throwing the evidence on there that about this super financing he received.
Well, you know what? You have not brought up the 100 million yet. You have said these people are talking about unlimited funds. Maybe somewhere they make a sentence that he had unlimited funds for a while. I don't believe that he ever had unlimited funds. But
well, virtually.
Of course, he didn't. But you have not proved sourced your comment that he got 100 million from the Rothschilds and the Warburgs. I mean, that's what you say, Jim.
I said the equivalent of 100 million. It was about 20 million at that time.
Okay, 20 million. All right.
Okay. Well, the books that the Hitler secret backers, Von Papen, who was one of Hitler's top associates. Okay, in 1954, published his memoirs. He was not killed at Nuremberg or anything. He said that the best source to explain where the Nazis got their money was the book Hitler's Secret Backers by Sidney Warburg in his memoirs. Now that's one of the.
Now I'm going to say I have to answer that. I have looked into Hitler's Secret Backers. That is a farce. It's a fake. It's supposedly written by a Warburg, and it's been out with two different names. It's also called Hitler's. Some other secret bankers, and it's with a different spelling of the name of the author, and it's not credible at all. And that so you can't bring up sources that are not credible at all.
Carolyn, how do you explain that Van Papen, one of Hitler's key associates and top advisors, says that was the book that best explained where the Nazis
When did Van Papen say that?
In his memoirs in 1954.
Exactly did he say? In 1954 he was a denazified person trying to make his life put his life back together, but in any event.
Okay, here's
I don't think that's
okay, let's stop there. We're not going to resolve this.
Right.
Let's talk about another comment that you made, Jim. You said that Hitler was associated with the communists, that he was kind of a go-between
mm-hmm.
In 1919.
Right.
And, yes, explain that.
Okay, well, I'll give two sources for that, although if I may think of more as we go on. One is the book 1999 on Hitler put out by Ian Kershaw, who's an establishment British historian. And he said that, and he says in 1919, when we might need to go into that story, how the communists thought that Stalin was going to march, or excuse me, Lenin was going to march the communist army straight to the Atlantic and take over Europe right after World War One. So you'll find the communists took over about six cities in Europe at that time. One of them was Munich. And he says, in that period, that six-month period where the communists ruled Munich, Hitler was the go-between between the communist leaders and the soldiers in the barracks who were holding the city for the communists. And it, Kershaw said in his 1999 book, Hitler, this incident is unexplainable in light of the rest of Hitler's career. Okay, now, that is not unexplainable by my thesis, which is that he was just a part Jewish man looking for his place in the New World Order. He thought the communists were going to be in control. When it was clear they were not going to be in control in Germany, he switched to another form of socialism, national socialism instead of international socialism, and became a Nazi. So that's one.
Okay. Okay. That's the answer. Okay. Carolyn.
There's more sources, but go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Carolyn, comment?
Yeah. Well, you know, I have Ian Kershaw is the exact person who has written in his book, Hitler, a Biography, that against the idea that Hitler was associated with the communists, with the Reds, when he was in Munich in the barracks. And as a matter of fact, here's a quote from page 71, significant, and this is with a whole several pages in which he's discussing this. But I just have this one quote written down. Significant is that within a week of the end of the rule of the councils, those were the socialist or the communist councils when the Reds were in control, within a week of the time that they lost control, Hitler had been nominated to serve on a three-man committee to explore whether members of his battalion had been actively involved in the Red Republic. This speaks in favor of the recognition within his battalion of his deep antagonism to Red rule. And it says this because he was voted to this position. This prevented him from being discharged with the rest of the Munich garrison at the end of May. And in fact, he remained in as a soldier working in the, you might say, information department until September. But Ian Kershaw is clearly disputes what you are saying.
No, he
makes the point that Hitler, that the associations of Hitler were simply because he was there. He was in the barracks. The Reds had taken over. There was not much he could do. He didn't join the ones who were, you know, really for them. He was just quiet with some others, and that those others who were against the Reds understood that he was also. And as soon as that changed, you know, he had no power about anything at that time.
Are you denying that Kershaw says that he was the go-between between the communist leaders and the barracks, propaganda the go-between that told the soldiers in the barracks what the communist leaders wanted him to hear?
He was voted to a position to represent his group. I don't know. I guess his barrack.
You mean in Munich? In Munich, he was voted
Munich,
by the
yeah. He was voted by the soldiers in his barracks when the communists were in control to represent them to the authorities, and the authorities happened to be the communists.
Well,
and that is what he did. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Kershaw says he was the.
But Kershaw concludes that does not mean that he was sympathetic to the communists.
Because Kershaw's an establishment historian, and he's trying to explain it away. The reason Hitler was
No, he's not. They don't try to explain that away.
Okay,
the reason Hitler...
There's another author by the name of Flood, Charles Braceland Flood.
Okay.
And he says that when the communists took over Munich, Hitler's regiment remained without leadership in the Maximilian 2 barracks on the city's outskirts. And that Hitler, who... They wore red armbands as protection. And Hitler, during that period of time, when Munich was recaptured, he started working for the Military Commission of Inquiry that brought to trial those soldiers who were accused of fighting beside the armed workers of the communist councils. He was diametrically opposed to communism, and his job was to testify against these men, and he did it.
That's after the communists were thrown from power, and that shows that Hitler had friends in high places that prevented him from being prosecuted like he should have been.
How does you show that?
You mean he was a prisoner?
At all.
Are you saying, Carolyn, he was a prisoner, that the communists had him as a prisoner in Munich and he couldn't leave?
Okay, here's what I'm saying. You know, the war was over when they were sending the soldiers back to, he spent some time, you know, he was injured, he was still in Pazewalk. But then he returned to Munich with his company, and he was in the barracks, and now the Germany was defeated. The future was extremely bleak. Communists had taken over Munich, where he lived, in the state of Bavaria. He decided to stay in the barracks as a soldier and see what was going to happen. He had no prospects otherwise. He had no power of any kind. He had no financial assistance. And he was a hero from the war. He had spent 4 years, fighting and sacrificing his life for Germany. And so he certainly deserved to spend a few more months in the barracks, and getting three meals a day and whatnot. And then he was really waiting to see. Now, I will say this. Adolf Hitler was a socialist, but he had created his own. He had his own socialist type of ideas, national socialist, because he was a strong and ardent nationalist from way back before the war, and so he combined those two things. But he was very sympathetic to socialism. He didn't like the monarchy. He didn't want the monarchy to return, and so he thought, there was not too many choices. The Social Democrats were the most powerful at that time. And so he was riding along. But as soon as the Reds were defeated and the right wingers took control, they recognized him as one of their own. And so did those other men in his barracks. And he was then seen to be something of an asset, because he had been a go-between with the Reds. When they were in authority, this does not make him working for the communists or getting money from the Jews from way back then.
Well, I didn't say he was getting money then, but Kershaw says he was taking the message from the communist leaders to the barracks, and he says, I guarantee you, I wouldn't be doing that, Carolyn.
Oh, you would,
taking,
too.
Taking messages from the enemies of Christian civilization to the soldiers. And I guarantee you, neither would Mike Piper.
No, we don't want to be contentious here.
I'm not being.
You make statements, Jim, that just are so out, and you haven't backed up a single one.
Well,
yet.
We'll let the listeners decide that. I've given plenty of sources, and I can give plenty more. But I don't want to. You go ahead. I don't want to monopolize the time unfairly.
Well,
okay.
I apologize. Okay. Outbursts.
Well, it's really difficult because you both strongly feel what you feel.
Yeah, there's no need for apology and no personal animosity. It's just a matter of this is a very important issue, and so I'm not offended by strong statements by Carolyn.
I would just tell the listeners to go to Ian Kershaw in whatever way they can, through going to his book on Google or even seeing what they can find on Amazon or finding it somewhere. And see what he actually has written about this, and it probably would be within maybe a whole chapter they'd have to read to get the whole beginning and end of it.
Right.
But I think that I will be vindicated if they will do that.
I encourage them to do the same thing. And the other source on that is also the Prisoner of Ottawa, that where Strauss...
Well, let's not go back to that.
Let me just say a thing here.
Go ahead.
After World War One ended, court historians... composed an official version of that horrific but profitable event, one of the major objectives of the war. And immediately afterwards, Herbert Hoover, who had been a Rothschild asset for a number of years, ever since he graduated from Stanford University, they went throughout Europe, collected a lot of records, brought them back, cataloged them, put them away into a repository, which was called the Hoover Institute. And so basically since that time, there have been court historians who have been composing records that complement or agree with the official version of World War One. And we know, absolutely, we know that the winners always write the wars, or always write the stories.
Right.
The winners always write the stories.
History,
And early on, the Adam Weishaupt said, by establishing reading societies and subscription libraries and taking these under our direction and supplying them through our labors, we may turn the public mind which way we will. And so they plan to impose all these basically propaganda on the public. And, okay, we do need to take a 3-minute break, and we will be right back with our guest today. And we did have a comment from one of our listeners, and she asked about the Google video. Now, Google did not discriminate against particular videos. They removed all of their videos on April 29th because they purchased YouTube and they didn't want a duplication. And so that's why they removed Jim's video and all the other videos. And then the other question, and you know, it's very, very important that when we're using sources that we look at both sides of every question and not just use sources that are pretty much in the mainstream, because we do understand that even before World War I started, that the three major news services in France, Germany, and in England were controlled by Jewish interest, and that the publishing companies, you may say the same thing about the publishing companies. The other question, and this is directed to Carolyn, what would be the motivation for these false rumors about Adolf Hitler being Jewish? What would be the motivation? I believe you covered that.
I did cover that.
Yes, you covered that.
I did cover it. And I will repeat it real quickly. I say, to find where it is, I say that it's because Adolf Hitler was in the process of deporting all the Jews from Germany. The National Socialists did not want Jews in the country. And I said of these two previous things, and there are many others, where heads of state have deported the Jews or expelled the Jews from their country because of the behavior of the Jews was not seen to be compatible with the cultural and economic life of the native people. And this is something you can imagine, that when you are expelled, this is a humiliating, experience, and you don't forget it, and you don't like it. And so the Jews are extremely sensitive to the idea that people don't want them around. And so, you know, Hitler was the last one to do this, and they were at this time able to mount this kind of Holocaust scam along with it. And now they want to demonize Hitler. They want the world to believe that Hitler was, of course, an evil madman. But there's another aspect where they say, well, he was a Zionist, and or even he was part Jewish, so that people who might want to follow him because they agree with him about the Jews won't do so, because he's now colored with the same
demonized
colors
of
the other leaders. And so you've got two different aspects. He's just like the other. He's a part of the world. New World Order, say, Illuminati conspiracy, or he's a part of the Jewish World Order, or he's just an evil madman who hates Jews for those who like Jews and don't like anti-Semitism. So
okay, Jim, do you have a comment?
Well, I would like Carolyn to cite one Jewish author in the last 65 years that pushes the idea that Hitler's part Jewish. All the Jewish authors nervously jump over it. They say, Oh, there was no Frankenberger, which some people accuse his grandfather, that's undetermined still to be.
It's not undetermined.
It certainly, everyone admits it's undetermined. I don't know one person that says it isn't, but name one author, author.
It's a total fabrication, Jim.
No. Like, name one Jewish author that has pushed that's Jewish Hitler.
You have several.
Carolyn, Jim.
Yoo-hoo.
We have to go to a 1-minute top of the hour break. Welcome back. This is Spingola Speaks. This is the second hour. My guests today are Carolyn Yeager, the author of Auschwitz, The Underground Tour, and the host of her own radio program, The Heretics Hour, and Jim Condit Jr., the producer of The Nazi Zionist Connection, The Final Solution to Adolf Hitler, which he produced in 2003. It was on Google, but the company removed all of their videos on April 29th. Carolyn's website is carolynyeager.com. Jim's website is hitlerdvd.com. Okay. You were mentioning about the expulsion of the Jews.
Well, I'm sorry, Deanna, but he asked me a question. I would like to answer it.
Oh, okay. What was the question?
Okay. Well, first, you know, I will say that Jim's videos are back on YouTube. I was watching them yesterday.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Yeah, they obviously are starting over again because there weren't that many viewers. So what was done was taken off, and now somebody's posted a whole bunch of them.
Oh, okay, because they said they weren't going to do that.
Well, they're there in part. And he
good, okay.
But, all right, he asked me to name one author, one Jewish author, who has made the point that Hitler's was a part Jewish. And he's got on his video there that he's selling, by the way, for $29. He's selling this, so he has a big interest in people buying his video, whether he believes in it or not, or whether he can defend it or not. But here's the author that he gives, Before Hitler Came, by Jewish school teacher Dietrich Bronder, and he goes into this quite a bit in his video. It was written in 1964. I know that he has not read it because he says, after he mentions something about it, he says he puts it away and says bombshell after bombshell, I'm sure. So, and it's a big, very, he says, it's hundreds of pages. I'm sure it's very good, you know. But then he says, in this Bronder talks about all the top Nazis who were Jews, including Hitler. And I can name, and none of them are, and I can prove it. He says Adolf Hitler was Jewish. He says Rudolf Hess was Jewish. Hermann Göring was Jewish. Gregor Strasser was Jewish. He spells it stressed, though. This is from The Founder of Israel, another book he pushes from Adolf Hitler, the founder of Israel, who's also Jewish. And he is quoting this and going along with it for Bronder's book.
Okay.
And he says Goebbels is Jewish, Rosenberg, Hans Frank, Heinrich Himmler, the foreign minister Ribbentrop, and on says they're all Jewish or related to Jews in some way.
That's not true. Hmm. Okay.
No, it isn't. And I have information on most of these men that he talks about in his videos being Jewish, and I wouldn't mind the opportunity to go through some of that.
Okay. Jim. Your comment, your response.
Would you agree, Carolyn, that Milch, the head of the German Air Force, was Jewish?
Well, now we're going... But
that's not one of the names.
The answer to that is yes. The answer to that is yes, admitted on all sides.
You asked me yes, of course. I know he was.
All right, good. Okay.
He was half Jewish.
Okay, how about...
He was a military man.
Yeah, how about...
He wasn't one of Hitler's,
top aides.
Yeah, how do you explain that Adolf Eichmann, who looks Jewish, spoke Yiddish, went back and forth to the Jews in Palestine for Hitler, and set up training camps for the Irgun, which was the Jewish strike force that took over Palestine in 1948? How do you explain the Nazis set up training camps for the strike force of what was eventually the Israeli takeover of Palestine, as did Mussolini? That's another super duper proof that Hitler.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up. Because
we have to take a 3-minute break.
What is your source?
Cool off, and we'll come back and we'll get that answered. We'll be right back. 3 minutes. Welcome back, friends. If you have questions, please email them to me at Deanna at jimatbengola.com. If you have a question or comment for Jim, write Jim in the subject line. If you have a question or comment for Carolyn, write Carolyn in the subject line. And Jim, the question put to you was
Can we answer this? He asked me a question right before the break. Yeah. He said, how do I explain how Adolf Eichmann went down to Italy and opened up training camps for the Irgun and so on and so forth? Okay, here's how I can explain it, Jim.
Okay.
You say in your $29 video you talk about the book Lenny Brenner's 51 Documents. And then from that, you go to a paper titled The Jews of Italy. And it was published, you say, in 1938. It says right on there. It doesn't bother you. It says right on there, it's from the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. It's one of their fireside chat series. And as I said, it's titled The Jews of Italy from 1938. Remember now, this is before Poland was invaded, even in 1939. And you say on the video, Mussolini and Adolf Eichmann set up, or you're reading from this or something, Mussolini and Adolf Eichmann set up training camps for the Irgun in Italy and in many of Hitler's occupied territories. You don't say which ones. There were no occupied territories in 1938. Eichmann spoke Yiddish, you say, and then you jump to Adolf Hitler, founder of Israel, another terrible, terrible book. It's just a big smear job. And you say Eichmann was hiding, and I think you're reading. Eichmann was hiding and was a full-blooded Jew, spoke Yiddish, went down to Palestine many times. He set up training camps for the Irgun. This was all done under Hitler's regime, surely with Hitler's knowledge. How do we explain, if Hitler is what we're told he was, that he's setting up training camps to help the Irgun train so they can eventually take over Palestine? This is on your video. The explanation is, this is all an invention. Adolf Eichmann did not set up training camps for the Irgun. Hitler did not okay setting up training camps for the Irgun. I don't know where this comes from. These things are just made up by people. But it is true that the Irgun was trying to get the Hitler government in the 30s to do some deals with them and cooperate with them. They were trying very hard, and there are some letters extant that can be read, one in particular that they wrote to Hitler, asking him to do this, but Hitler did not go along with this. I'm done.
Okay, your comment, Jim.
Having the training camp set up for them is not only Adolf Hitler, founder of Israel, which I will admit is an anecdotal book. That doesn't mean it's worthless, though, in all respects. But the scholarly source is The Secret Contacts, Zionist-Nazi Relations, 1933 to 1941, which appeared in the Journal of Palestine Studies in 1976 and was written by Klaus Polkehn, Polkehn. I want to answer quickly a few other things here that have been thrown out.
You know, this is not a scholarly. This is another.
The Journal of Palestine Studies isn't a scholarly publication?
Written by Klaus Polkehn, Secret Contacts, Zionist-Nazi Relationships, 1933 to 1941. You know, this has got an agenda, and this is not a good enough source to convince anybody that there were training camps for the Irgun set up by the Nazis. It just is not true.
Well, there's plenty. Carolyn, all you're doing is denying everything I'm bringing up.
Oh, you're just bringing up things that really don't have.
I need to get a few seconds in here to say something.
Right, right. Carolyn, let Jim.
One, we do sell the video for $29, and for $37, we add in the 3-hour interview I did with Christopher John Bjerknes on this same subject. But we also give every person that buys it the permission to copy it unlimited times. So we're not in some kind of a money-making thing here, but if people want a hard copy, as many people do, we have to charge something, and that's what we charge. Also, I didn't put it up free on Google. Other people have done that, and that's fine with me. We never made this as a money-making deal, but again, if people want a hard copy, some people have, you know, we've had tremendous compliments on this particular information. And I would urge the when it goes back up on free on Google, or if you want to go to Christopher John Bjorknes' site and listen to the 3-hour thing, I urge the listeners to evaluate the information. For instance, Dietrich Brunder, the Jewish school teacher that published the Before Hitler Came in 1964, that book was ruthlessly suppressed as soon as it came out. It was not allowed to be in circulation. So, yes, he is Jewish, but I wonder if Carolyn even heard of him before she saw my video. And
No, I didn't.
Okay, so
and
the
you
point
know,
is
I don't
he
think
is
it was ruthlessly suppressed. I think it was just ignored. Because
no, it was no, it was taken out
it
of circulation.
Ruthlessly.
No, it was taken out of circulation, and as is anything, pretty much that was that is a lot of stuff.
Well,
on the Nazis
it's slanderous. It's slanderous.
Okay. Well, you think that the occupying government of Germany wanted to protect Hitler after 1964? It's ridiculous.
I do not know why. But
it's the international bankers running the world right now who want to stop people from realizing that Hitler was their second greatest scam of the 20th century, and I'm leaving Hitler's frame of mind aside because I do think Hitler tried to overthrow the bankers, as did Stalin, but they used him. They got done what they wanted on two fronts, and that's what I'm saying. And a lot, and people are intrigued by this information, but that is not every mainstream Jewish author, Carolyn, skips over this idea that Hitler's grandfather was a Rothschild or a Frankenberg, and they nervously try to explain it away. They don't push it. Not one Jewish
major author
pushes it.
Good. Let's get back to that. I want to get back to the Hitler's grandfather was a Rothschild because that is the main sort of the main topic, and we haven't really covered that.
Sure. Okay. Let's talk about that.
Go ahead.
Was Hitler part Jewish? Was his grandfather a Rothschild? Okay.
I'll let
first?
Jim go first because okay. I've been talking.
Okay, the first source of that was when Hitler came like a meteor out of nowhere. Admittedly, he was a great orator. There's no question about that. But if we get a chance to address that, I'd like to address that his ability as an orator. But and so he was much more of a substantive man than the bankers expected. There's no question about that either, because he was able to run all aspects of the government more or less efficiently rather than just be a great orator. But when he came on the world stage like a meteor after he got the money in 1929 and forced all his competition out of Germany, then the Austrian government under Dollfuss said, where'd this guy come from? He's an Austrian. He's now head of Germany. They did a government investigation. And that is because back then, and still in Europe in many places, you have to sign in where you're working or where you're staying in a hotel that night. I had to do that in Italy about 10 years ago still. And the story has survived that his grandmother, Maria Schnickelgruber, was signed in as a maid in the Rothschild estate in Vienna. Now, Hitler then went, and the Nazis went into Austria, killed Dollfuss in 1934, confiscated allegedly any report.
Hold on.
Let me finish just for a second here.
Okay.
And then also Hitler went in and destroyed the graveyards where his ancestors were from and turned them into marching camps. So there's been a tremendous effort to destroy what is known about Adolf Hitler's ancestry, and that's why we say the preponderance of the evidence supports that he was part Jewish, but
okay.
It's not proven.
All right. My turn.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you all. Now, I advise readers to please go to my website, carolynyeager.com, and click on the article, The Fake Legends of Adolf Hitler's Jewish Grandfather, How and Why It Got Started and Why It's Not True. And a great deal of that will be explained. Now, when you say, first he says that Adolf Hitler came out like a meteor out of nowhere. Absolutely not true. We were just talking about what he was doing in 1919 and how he became a favored speaker within the Reichswehr, to speak to the soldiers that were being demobilized because they were confused about all of the political issues. And from there, he joined this political party and he had his ideas very clear by that time. And he worked as a politician in Germany from 1920, let's say, until 1933 when he was made chancellor. And this is not coming out of nowhere. He was very well known and more well known, as time went on. And I won't dwell on that anymore. So he didn't come out of nowhere, and he worked very hard. And then the idea of this Dollfuss thing, Hitler did not send his troops or any kind of troops down into Austria to to kill Dollfuss. These were Austrian Nazis who did this on their own, and he wasn't happy about it at all. And the Dollfuss in his investigation, that's another made up story. I mean, he did an investigation probably, but there's no report that at all shows any proof whatsoever that Adolf Hitler's grandmother, whose name was Schickel Gruber, ever went to Vienna and ever worked as a maid or a cook or whatever in a Rothschild home, nor did she go to Graz and work in the same way in the home of a Frankenreiter. And there's even plenty of proof why the Frankenreiter story is totally impossible. And that's the one that was given by Hans Frank before he was sent to the gallows. So that has could have a little more credibility, but it has not been able to be backed up in any way. Now, this, they talk about this Rothschild family. What Rothschild? Who? You know, they just say a Rothschild. And then they say, well, because we can make up this story that Hitler's grandmother, because Hitler's father was illegitimately born or the father wasn't named, we can just come in and make up all these stories about who it might be based on nothing. Now, it's proven that his grandmother did not go to Vienna. She couldn't have gone to Vienna. Okay. So that whole thing is wrong.
Okay, hold that thought. We've got a 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. Our guests today are Carolyn Yeager and Jim Condit Jr. And you were just in the midst of answering a question or making a comment, Carolyn?
Yeah, there's a few more points about this phony Rothschild story. And he also mentioned that Hitler went down into Austria and destroyed all the graveyards where his family was buried. And he, along with that killing Dollfuss, which he didn't do. All right, so that story is that at a certain point, they turned that area that not his hometown, which was where his family came from, was Dollersheim, but Strohn's, where his grandmother was born and some other people were born. Strohn's and a couple of other towns were turned into a training ground for the war, during the war. And so all the people were moved out from that area to another area, and that was all turned into a training ground. So yes, any cemeteries there would have been kind of lost, but they might still be able to be, they may have been preserved. But on the other hand, all of the records, all of the birth records of all of those people and the church records and whatsoever were transferred to another town, and they all still exist. And Jim had said at one point that this was all the records had been destroyed, and so it was all just conjecture anyway. But no, that's not true. The records are all there, and the records are what the genealogy of Hitler is based on. And there are several genealogists. Well, I already pointed that out once, but that have done his genealogy, and nobody, and anybody with any sense or any credibility will ever go along with this Rothschild or this grandfather from outside of the family somewhere. It was a family. This is all accounted for, and it's in my article. Now, the other thing is that Bridget Hamann, who wrote the book that is recommended by Jim in his video, Hitler's Vienna, and he says, he quotes things from her book which back up some things that he says, but she actually says the exact opposite. But while she's getting to her conclusion, she's giving the stories of different people, and that's what he takes and then says, this is what's in this book. And that's what I would call really deceitful. Now, she says she thoroughly debunked this Frankenberger story in her book, Hitler's Vienna, and she goes along 100% with the genealogy of Hitler as it is found in his official genealogies.
Okay, now she's a Jewish author. Again, she's not pushing that Hitler was Jewish, as do none of the Jewish authors since World War II, except
Brunder. That's all you use are Jewish authors.
Except Brunder, who was suppressed. So this does not fit in with your idea that it's a Jewish thing to push that Hitler was Jewish. It is not done. They try to avoid it like the plague. I encourage anybody to go look at what I say about Bridget Hyman's book, and then read what she says, and then look. I didn't endorse everything about that book. What we're doing, Deanna and Carolyn, is pulling pieces of information that are in the official record, and it's even in the, especially in some of the establishment historians, where they don't give the significance of it. They just pass it over. And we call it an avalanche of evidence. The DVD is two hours and 20 minutes. The CD with radio interview with Christopher
now,
John.
Now you're advertising.
Wait a minute. But you've many times said something like I'm being deceitful and that type of thing. And again, if we don't speak strongly on this show, then the listeners are getting cheated. So speak as strongly as you want. But I'm saying they can look at either one for free, or listen or look for free, and they can decide whether I'm pulling things out of context, because you're not always making the distinctions that I make. When I have a chance, Deanna, I got a timer in front of me now, and I'm going to try to limit my comments to 1 minute every time I talk, but I would like to address one of the most significant sources that Hitler was funded by Jewish bankers in the New York Times in 1933, whenever I get a chance.
Well, Jim, I want to point out that you say we are doing this and we've done this. You have expressed in your video and also in an email that you wrote that you had a mentor, mm-hmm. which you started out calling Ratisbon,
right.
And he gave you all this information. You didn't find it. He presented you with this, and then later, after he was dead, you gave his name and told us that he is.
Dr. Paul Reznowski.
Yes, the late great Dr. Paul Reznowski. He gave me about 80% of what's in the video, I found some things myself once, and so did others once we realized what to look for.
Well, yeah, sure, 20%. Now here's the thing: he is Polish. Probably Catholic,
and
you are very Catholic. And I think this should be maybe brought out because your interest is in helping the Catholic Church, I believe, because and there's nothing wrong with that. But you are very you are very partial to Poland because it's Catholic, Roman Catholic, and so you have some interest here in all of this. And this man has given you a bunch of material written by Jews, and it's all very questionable. And then you found a few passages here and there from probably some better books. And then this is what makes up your whole
here. Hundreds of sources make up our whole deal, right?
It's not hundreds.
No, there's
all down here.
Let's cut to a 3-minute break. We will be right back with our guest today. Stay tuned. Welcome back, friends. My guests today are Carolyn Yeager and Jim Condon Jr. And you know, you're both citing sources, and there's a tendency for people to cite the sources that are compatible with their own beliefs without looking at the logistical evidence. We have to look at what happened to Germany in World War One. We have to look at what happened to Germany after World War One with the Versailles Treaty. We have to look at what happened during World War Two. And then you have to go back even further before World War One, where the communists, the international bankers, actually targeted Germany for destruction. And if you don't go back and look at that whole picture and do a whole sweep of history, you're not going to understand. Right now, we're taking things out of context, so to speak. We are saying, okay, was Hitler part Jewish? Or who funded him? And those things are significant but they don't take into account the things that happened to Germany.
Now, can I comment on that, Deanna, when you're done?
Sure.
Are you done?
I'm done.
Oh, I didn't mean to shorten.
No, that's fine.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about the what happened also after World War II to Germany. Let me just mention on this, there's certain things that are in the public record, like Dunkirk, that you cannot just, it's not just sources. It's something that we all know happened. How about the fact that Hitler, which is was for the Jewish agenda and against the Christian agenda, certainly against the Catholic agenda, how about that he treated the Polish, the Hungarians, all the, and so many of which, and even the Russians that wanted to fight with him, as undermentioned. He even said in the end, I made a mistake in not treating them better. How about the fact that he absurdly made the Japanese honorary Aryans while he was...
He never used that word, Aryan.
Well, he made the he called the Japanese honorary Aryans. Well, I don't, at the moment...
Well, now, you know, we're getting into...
Well, wait,
your minute's up. Well, your minute's up. I think you're only going to talk a minute.
Wait, is my minute...
Because
is
I think, you know, I don't... I'm very...
Wait a minute, Carolyn, was
very
my
much
minute
against
really
going
up?
Off into vague
no,
topics.
No, I'm going...
In,
that's
when
public
we're,
knowledge.
I would really like to...
Public knowledge.
To come to a conclusion as to whether there is any evidence... whether Adolf Hitler was Jewish or whether he was a Zionist. I know that we can finish this program and everybody will stay where they are and nothing has been said. Now, I'm going to say this real quick. Your friend who you mentioned, you did your 3-hour interview with that you can buy along with your video on your website. Christopher John Bjerknes, he comes out and on this interview with you, and you were saying, oh, wow, that's really interesting, and you were going to check all that out. But he comes out and calls all these top Nazis Jewish. Now, he says Hermann Göring was Jewish. Now, I can, if I had the time, because I have it all right here, I can give the evidence as to why he is not Jewish and where that silly idea came from. He says Dr. Morell was Jewish, Hitler's main doctor during the war. No, there's no evidence whatsoever to be found that he had any he was part Jewish. Hans Frank, they call a Jew. You call him a Jew, part Jewish. No, he was not. Yes, he was. His father was, Hans Frank is the only one. His father. No, I'm thinking of somebody else. Hans Frank was not Jewish. Heinrich Hoffmann, his photographer, was not Jewish, although, Bjerknes says he was. He says Alfred Rosenberg was Jewish. He was not Jewish. He even says Eva Braun was part Jewish, and because she worked for the Jewish photographer Heinrich Hoffmann. Absolutely not.
Okay. Well. No.
And then he says that he doesn't believe that Hitler and Eva died in the bunker. Well, that's I don't want
nobody
to believe
believes.
That.
Nope,
but
nobody.
The other thing that's really important is this Angela Rauble story.
Okay, now,
that she ran a Jewish academy in Vienna.
Okay, now your minute's up.
But I've gone far. Yes.
Okay, so now I'm looking at my clock. Okay, I'll try to keep my thing to a minute here. Okay, first of all, you're just making assertions on they're not Jewish or not Jewish or not Jewish.
I'm not. I have the evidence right here, but I don't have time to give it.
Well,
all.
We don't talk. The word that Hitler's doctor was Jewish comes from, among other sources, is the Jewish Connection by M. Hirsch Goldberg, published in the 60s. And again, citing Jewish sources for some of these things.
Are you talking about the doctor of his mother? Dr.
Bob? No, I'm talking about his doctor, Hitler's doctor. Oh, another little fact about Hitler that's kind of interesting, he would never let anyone see him naked.
Okay, thank you for saying that.
That's in Dirt.
That's
in David.
True.
Wait, you're interrupting
true.
Me, Carolyn. You're interrupting
people.
Me.
People.
I know.
People.
But it
okay,
is, but,
Carolyn, well, let Jim say it, and then you can
And could that be because he was circumcised? David Irving reports that he would not let anybody see
but
him
he's
naked.
Wrong.
And explain, before we get off the air, Carolyn, I want you to explain why he failed to win the war at Dunkirk and why he, again, absurdly declared war on the United States the day or two after Pearl Harbor, the only way that Roosevelt could have had an excuse to enter Europe, European theater.
Okay, let's stick to
the... Let's get to Adolf Hitler would not let anybody see him naked. Absolutely untrue. In fact, there are accounts by his doctors where they're saying how they asked him if they could examine him down below. He said, certainly, fine. And they pulled his pajamas down and so on when he was, you know, ill. And they looked him all over, and he never had any objection to that. So I don't know. David Irving is not the authority of all authorities. He makes a lot of mistakes. He does a lot of good work.
Well,
he's discovered a lot of things, but he makes mistakes. And this just is not true that Hitler had this thing that nobody ever saw, his private area.
Well, why does David Irving say that then?
I do not know. David Irving says a lot of things that are wrong.
Okay, why did Hitler declare war on the USA, giving Roosevelt an excuse to send 90% of our troops to Europe?
Well, now, is this really where we want to go?
Yes, we want to hear these explanations.
Well, I don't think so, because we have 20 minutes left, and I have not gotten you yet to admit, and you're trying to get away from that, to admit that there is no evidence about Adolf Hitler being Jewish or being, let's stick with the Jewish. Now, are you going to admit that there is no real hard evidence at all? Because you even have admitted, you said, well, there's a lot of things that point to it.
Well, they don't
really point to it.
Okay. I've said numerous times, and I'll say it again, there is no final proof that Adolf Hitler is Jewish at this point. But there is plenty of evidence that points in that direction. I say the preponderance of the evidence indicates that he is, but it is not proven. What is proven is the great cooperation between the Nazis and the Zionists, which I believe are just two sides of the same coin. Although that doesn't mean that Hitler didn't try to overthrow the bankers at a few points, which I believe he did, as did Stalin.
Well, you're saying a lot of things,
right?
You say that it's not proven, but then you say that the preponderance of the evidence points to it. No, it doesn't, Jim.
Well,
the preponderance, there is no preponderance of evidence that points to that. We have to go by evidence. You're doing what Dr. Judy Wood was talking about yesterday on this.
Right.
You're taking a position, and then you're looking for things to fit to it. And you can always do that. As she said, it's called cherry picking. And you cherry pick from here, from there, from somewhere else. And then you say, look, this is showing that what I'm saying is true. You have to start with the evidence and then see what it shows. Where is the evidence that Adolf Hitler was part Jewish? We're talking about genealogy here. We're talking about political positions.
Do you think I made up the Austrian report that has now persisted for 65 years? Do you think
Where's the Austrian report? I have never seen that Austrian report. They only talk about it. Where is it?
The people that talked about it are the officials in Austria back in 1933.
But they never showed it to anybody. They were very anti-Hitler then.
You're saying the Nazis, whoever the Nazis were, the Nazis murdered Dollfuss and tried to confiscate, and apparently were successful at this point. Now, you know, the Jews...
The Nazis at that time, and this was not in 33 either, they were trying to take over the Dollfuss government. And in the process, I think it was Dollfuss's government, in the process, Dollfuss was shot and died.
Yeah, was shot and killed. He was shot and murdered.
Yeah, and these were Austrian Nazis.
Well,
I think they might have been outlawed at that time.
Okay.
These were renegade people. These were not under Hitler's direction.
Well, that's
and you don't really know your history.
Well, you're just making a ton of assertions, and so am I, because time is limited. I just got to ask the listeners to go study, if they're interested, study the evidence on both sides. Yeah. I didn't seek this position. I didn't have any idea about this position until 1999 when Dr. Riznowski called me. I put out stuff that I stand behind, Carolyn, and I'll tell you this. I at first thought Dr. Riznowski had gone off the deep end. But then when I started to look into his basic point, was that Nazism was working with the international bankers and Zionism, an avalanche of evidence pours down on your head.
Jim?
Yeah.
As I mentioned when we came back from the break, that people will use sources that are compatible with their own beliefs. Now, if you believed what Ratisbone said, then you are going to acquire the sources that are going to justify your beliefs.
No, I don't do that. I've been a cutting edge on computer vote fraud, on the crisis.
Well, that has nothing to do with what you're
talking
about.
No, I'm just saying my investigative method is not to just look for stuff that supports me. I look for stuff that will shoot down my positions as well. And that is why my positions are strong. And that is why I will submit to you 80 to 90% of the people listening to this program want to look into the things that I'm saying.
You want them to look into it so that they will look into your work, and you think that they won't know any better. And let me tell you, your positions are not strong, Jim.
Hey, I urge
very
people
weak.
In every
They're
letter.
Very, very weak.
Yeah, that's an assertion.
And people have to believe this Xerox copy of something from 1930-something that you put up on your whiteboard there. They have to believe that that is something credible that they can believe
yeah,
in.
Well, that's, and, that's
and they have to believe in you in order to do that.
No,
and that's
no, no,
basically
no.
what it is.
Do not
well,
believe,
are we going to believe Jim Condit or no, are we not?
Do not believe in me. Don't. I tell people, I say it, everybody listening to this program, do not believe one thing just because I say it. Go and check it out as I did. And again, everything isn't proven. I've said numerous times that Hitler's Jewish or not Jewish is not proven. But that the Zionists cooperated with the Nazis and vice versa, that's
why
proven.
Why don't you stop saying it then? Why don't you come out and say to everybody, be honest and helpful, and say, well, I'm going to give up this Hitler was Jewish idea because I think it's not been proven and it's really...
No, because the so much evidence points to it, including
there
his
is
personal,
not so much.
Including
Wait a minute.
His personal
the
characteristics.
The evidence that you're using is that he allowed people to go to Palestine. Okay.
Given
what the Jews were doing to Germany, what they had done to Germany, when so many of them came from the East and moved into Germany, when the country was absolutely devastated from World War One, they bought up properties, pennies on the dollar, pennies on the mark. Mm-hmm. They absolutely exploited the German economy, and Germans were starving.
Okay.
Absolutely starving.
Now, is this Sienna talking?
They had the prominent position in education, in finance, in the media, in publishing. Morally, they opened all of these, what did they call them? Not speakeasies, but clubs.
Wow. Yeah.
And it affected
nightclubs.
The morality of the German people.
Now,
and so when
Deanna,
he came
Deanna,
in.
Deanna, is this Deanna speaking?
What?
I was having trouble telling who was speaking. Is Deanna speaking now?
Me, yeah. I'm
okay.
sorry, yes.
Okay. Go ahead, yeah.
And so, yes, he did want to get them out of the country. Moscow, the last expulsion that before Hitler came along was in 1891 in Moscow.
Well, so, I agree with all you're saying, but you've both heard of the term false opposition. The question is, was Hitler the greatest false opposition of the 20th century? Again, I ask Carol. You
well,
cannot.
See, you can always make that. You can always bring that up. You can always say that. But if you have nothing very convincing behind
it,
then
two questions. We got 15 minutes, Carolyn. Why did Hitler fail to win the war at Dunkirk, and why did he oblige the international bankers by declaring war on the United States for no reason whatsoever 2 days after Pearl Harbor?
No, you know, those are complicated questions.
No, they're
do
simple.
Have answers.
No.
And I do not have time to talk about all of that. I would be happy to come back on another program and talk about that with you,
would
Jim.
You,
but
would,
I'm not going to use up the rest of this program to go
just,
in that direction.
We'll give
you
the quick
go,
answer.
Because that
give,
is not the question that we have asked here.
Well, give the quick answer. I mean,
there's
I get,
no quick answer to that.
If these were military decisions,
these were decisions of state. They had nothing to do with the fact that he was on their side.
I'll give the quick answers. He was in deals with the Rothschilds.
No, you're just giving prop. You're just trying to give your.
Well, the listener can decide whether mine makes sense
or
your unwillingness.
Okay, let's put it this way. Let's put it this way. Carolyn is scheduled to come back on the program, I believe, on the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
Would you both consider coming back together?
Well, listen, I'll let you two decide.
Is it productive?
If Carolyn wants to have the, you know, she may have something else planned to talk to you about on the 20th. Whatever time you want me to come back, if you want me to, I'm glad to come back. You know, so you two decide, and I'll be glad to come back. I don't see any reason to restrict the conversation, though, because the way people get a picture of what happened is when they look at the irrefutable historical circumstances like Dunkirk.
But wait a minute. You're saying
you don't restrict the conversation. It's just one person giving their stuff and another person giving, and it doesn't help the listener to come to any kind of a conclusion or decide. If I see this as a debate, and debates have strict rules, and you can't just talk about any old thing you feel like.
Well, it depends on how the rules of the debate.
Now, here's an example. One thing you say in your video that Adolf Hitler had the nickname Wolf. Now, yeah. This nickname came about in the 20s, and you say it's often a Jewish nickname.
Right.
Now, where does that come from? It's often a Jewish nickname. You know, is there anything behind that? You throw out things like this, and people who don't know any better, they say, oh, he had a nickname that was a Jewish nickname. No, it wasn't a Jewish nickname. Wolf is a very meaningful word in German, and I don't know what it has to do with the Jews. Now, another thing you say that his war decorations were maybe not legitimate. This is what your mentor told you, Your mentor
said,
this is absolutely false.
Well, the guy who got him his first war medal was himself Jewish.
We know that there were Jews in the military, and he didn't have any problem with that. Certainly in World War I or in World War II.
There's a long history of Jewish people in armies giving themselves combat awards that they didn't deserve.
Okay, let's take our 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back, friends. My guests today have been Carolyn Yeager, the author of Auschwitz, The Underground Tour, and the host of her own radio program, The Heretic's Hour, and Jim Condon, Jr., the producer of The Nazi Zionist Connection, The Final Solution to Adolf Hitler, which was produced in 2003. Carolyn's website is carolynyeager.com. Jim's website is hitlerdvd.com. Now, I don't know that we've resolved a single issue, and that's probably...
I would like to say that, if I could, please, and I'm going to apologize to you, Deanna, so much for all my breaking in, but I just can't help it on this, because I do want to say before we go that Jim has not answered a single, he has not proven or brought up the proper evidence for a single one of his assertions that I have presented him with from his own video and interview that I asked the listeners when they listen to this again to pay attention and see if they think that he has. So I think, because I say that he hasn't, and so therefore we have to conclude that the evidence does not exist, or he would have been able to do a better job of presenting it to us.
Mm-hmm. Jim, your comments.
Would urge people to, I don't believe the listeners are concluding that at all. I said at the beginning, and I say now, there's not absolute proof that Hitler was part Jewish. I do believe the preponderance of the evidence shows that, and I do believe it'll be proved eventually. You know, the Jewish establishment screamed that Lenin was not Jewish until they admitted it, and I believe it was the Jerusalem Post in 1991, that he was one-fourth Jewish on his father's dad, his grandfather was one-fourth Jewish. So, but on the Zionist connection, on the unexplainable, Carolyn, what you have avoided here, and I don't mean this as a personal attack, you have avoided the obvious explanation to Dunkirk and Hitler declaring war on the United States 2 days after Pearl Harbor, which are unexplainable by any military strategy. That just gave the Rothschilds the chance to invade Europe instead of go most of our soldiers to Japan.
Dunkirk
avoided
and accurate,
winning the war.
Jim,
please.
That's not really accurate and correct. I mean, they had a longstanding alliance.
Who did?
And the alliance was that if one was attacked, then the other one would also, you know, they were aligned.
Japan never declared war on Russia, and Russia attacked, you know, and Hitler were at war. So
that's a totally different subject.
No, you said they would declare war on each other. There was no reason for him to do that whatsoever. And this is all Hitler... The compromise.
Well, I think you have to look at the dates of all those declarations of war.
Well, there were two. He declared war.
The declaration of war. I mean, The United, the answer to that, the, this quick one, is that the United States had been at war with Germany for about 2 years already, or at least fully for a year. And so when they declared war on Japan, then Hitler knew that it was going to be total war, and
he went ahead
and declared war so that he could go ahead and take the measures.
But Roosevelt couldn't have attacked Europe.
This did not accomplish for the Allies what you think.
Roosevelt couldn't have attacked Europe if he hadn't declared war on the USA.
Okay, yes, let's. We are out of time.
Okay.
We are out of time. It's been interesting. I'll say that. Thank you so much, Carolyn. Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk to you tomorrow.